Here at Stories of Hope, Kerry Atherton's mission is to give people a platform to share their stories of hope with the world. We also want to provide the same chance to businesses that are passionate about mental health and want to support the podcast. If you'd like to partner with Stories of Hope and advertise your services on this podcast, send a message to kerry@empowerlifesolutions.com.au with your details. Now, on with the episode. In times of trauma and adversity, we must create space for connection by sharing a story of hope. Welcome to Stories of Hope Worldwide, hosted by Kerry Atherton. This podcast shares inspiring stories of individuals who have faced significant challenges and emerged stronger, offering hope and resilience to listeners all over the world. Join Kerry, the founder of Stories of Hope, every week to hear these remarkable journeys and find strength to overcome your adversity. Now, let's listen in to this week's conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Stories of Hope Worldwide. I'm Kerry Atherton, and today's guest is AJ Williams. AJ went from life in public housing, growing up with two alcoholic parents in the midst of domestic violence, to today building an eight-figure business in the wellness industry. But this story isn't just about financial success. It's about holding on to a dream of hope for a better life and also rising up in resilience in the face of adversity. Welcome, AJ.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Great to have you on. I don't usually start the interviews with these questions, but I held my Stories of Hope event on the Sunshine Coast last night, and there was a lot of lonely people in the room. And I was thinking this morning about the tiniest things that it takes to make someone feel connected. It could be just liking the same food or the same color. So I'm going to hit you with three simple questions to start with, lighthearted questions before we get into this amazing story. What's your favorite color?
Green.
Oh, no way.
I've been wearing a green top today too.
I was like, wouldn't it be crazy if he said green? Really? I've got to wear green today. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, that's awesome. What's your favorite food?
My favorite food, I'd have to say it would be pizzas. Yeah, I love pizza.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big time favorite in Australia and Italy.
Definitely.
And who's your greatest role model?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'd probably say my best mate. Like, I look up to him quite a lot. He's got his own story of hope in a way. He's just inspiring the way that he goes about everything.
Oh, that's great. Before we get into your backstory, can you tell us a bit about the wonderful business that you've built up?
So we started Revel Saunas in September of 2023, so not that long ago. We sell saunas and ice baths Australia-wide, and we're just about to scale that globally into the US and into Europe, which is super exciting. It's a great product. We get a lot of great feedback. We sort of positioned ourselves in that premium side of the market. And obviously the wellness market is a growing industry at the moment, with people more wanting to improve their wellness over their physical fitness at home. So there's a lot of people getting saunas and ice baths in their home environment so that they can improve themselves. And there's a real shift in everyone's movement to live longer, happier lives. And saunas and ice baths can really facilitate that longevity piece.
Yeah, there's so many shows out at the moment, isn't there, about living longer. But what I also love is something that I always talk about with my guests and at our events is self-care strategies for positive mental health. And so important when you've had a backstory like we have, growing up in the midst of alcoholism and trauma. And so I love it that you're doing something that's helping people in every facet of the wellness industry.
Yeah, it's super fulfilling knowing that you're not capitalizing on somebody just because it's a product. You're actually helping somebody facilitate their journey through whatever they're going through, and obviously helps them live a longer, happier life.
So life wasn't always like this for you, AJ, was it?
No, not at all.
No. And I know you haven't talked about your story much yet at this stage, so I'm very honoured that you're sharing with us today. But can you take us back to the beginning and what your childhood was like?
Yeah. So essentially my biological father left my mum when I was about 9 months old. We lived in a housing commission house at that stage in West Tweed, just south of the Gold Coast there, on the border of New South Wales and Queensland, actually. And my stepfather moved in quite quickly. My biological father and my stepfather are both severe alcoholics. My biological father, though, is more of just a drunk that will just drink and do his own thing rather than try and spend time with us kids. And my stepfather was quite abusive. So he would go to the pub on like a Thursday night, obviously payday back in those days, and then come home and get super abusive to my mum. So I grew up seeing that sort of domestic violence abuse from a very, very young age. There's a lot of trauma and stuff that comes with that, I suppose. Just fearful of what's next, I suppose, like what's going to come home. In saying that, he did get me into sport early, which I'm super grateful about, at a young age, which sort of set me up to succeed now. That cycle kept going until I was about 14 years old. And one night, it was a Thursday night again, he went to the pub, come home. He'd always get in my mum's face and I'd stand in, and then like normally just my mum would, we'd go and stay at a motel or whatever. And this night I just said, I've had enough of this, and stood up for mum. We got in a physical altercation, and then my mum asked me to leave the house after that. So mm-hmm. I was 14 years old. I took my sister, who's 11 months younger than me. She went and stayed at her boyfriend's house at the time, and I went and stayed at a friend's place. That friend ended up being pretty toxic for me. And then, yeah, from that, we sort of got our own place, and I left school when I was 19, in year nine, sorry. And we got our own place, and I just started that cycle of working, trying to find my feet and support myself along the journey as well as my sister.
And in what way was that friend toxic? Because it's a very young age, isn't it? Very impressionable. Yeah. And often it really sets the stance for how we go or what path we take in life.
Yeah, I suppose he was very narcissistic and controlling. Just wanted to cause trouble and cause fear in people's lives. And obviously I was probably attracted to that based off my upbringing. For some reason, I felt comfort in that. But as soon as I realised that it was sort of toxic for me, I cut that relationship off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what sport were you into?
I started boxing when I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
My stepdad lied to the PCYC and said that I was 6. And then played rugby league up until I was about 13. And from there, I moved into AFL, and that's where I really found my feet in the sporting world.
Can you tell us about the power of sport?
I think it's got a few different powers, right? Like, so when family life at home isn't great, yeah, actually I have like a really big support network in the footy community. It's like having a massive family that's all there for one purpose, and that purpose is of playing a team sport and creating memories. And on the other hand, it's really good for mental health and your well-being, because it gives you somewhere where you can create an identity and have something to attach to that makes you feel worthy and makes you feel like you're adding value to other people's lives. And it also is an outlet for, like, when you're playing footy, when I play footy, I still play footy now, it's like nothing else in the world is happening. Like, there could be bombs exploding around the field and I wouldn't even know, because I'm just in the zone and in my element, just doing what I love doing for sure.
Yeah, connection's so important, isn't it?
100%, yeah. Yeah, the people that you connect with, they're friends for life as well. Like, you just make so many good connections, and there's a lot of people in similar situations and you wouldn't even realise, because when they're there, they've created their own identity and have attached themselves to that. Yeah, that they just feel comfortable and confident in that environment.
Yeah, having that common denominator, that's what we were talking about at the event last night.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like the power that knowing somebody else is going through the same situation as you or has been through that situation, the power that brings to somebody creates, yeah, it's just super powerful. Like you don't realize that other people actually on similar journeys, might not be identical, but similar journeys that have so much relatability that it makes you feel like, okay, if this person's going through it, I'm not just one in a million that the world hates me. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It really brings you hope, doesn't it, when you're with other people that have gone through hard times and seeing what they've come out of?
Yeah, definitely. It's a massive changer, a game changer. And I suppose like I've only just started telling up until sort of 6 months ago, everyone thought that I grew up in a normal environment, had like the Australian battler type parents and lived in just a normal household when the reality was I definitely didn't grow up in an environment that was like that. I grew up in a pretty hectic environment and I really hid it behind a facade of myself and what I told myself. And I was always embarrassed to tell the story. But as soon as I started telling the story, I started making these connections that were just so powerful. And I felt a sense of like achievement and reward being able to help other people as well. When I'd tell them and they would go, oh my God, like I didn't realize that all. This is what I've been through. And you could actually you could be a sounding board for that person. It just opens up so many new relationships and new doors to actually impact people's lives.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Because yeah. When we share our story, we give the other person permission to feel safe enough to be open then.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing people are looking for as well. It's like they just want to feel that they can be vulnerable. That's just like a massive, like it lifts a massive weight off their shoulders that when you give them a safe space to tell their truth. And yeah, the impact that has is, yeah, I just love it. Really enjoy. Yeah, bring hope to other people's lives.
Yeah, so do I. I love that. Yeah. As far as the world's perception of success goes, people are so quick to judge, aren't they? They look at you on the outside. They look at what you've achieved, how much money you've got, but they have not seen the beginning of the journey.
100%. And it's a long journey as well. Like, yeah, you get it all the time. It's like, oh, you must have been given money or given an opportunity, but
yeah, people actually say that to you, do they?
Well, you can definitely tell that.
Oh yeah,
and even me. So when I see people that have done really well, you think, oh, he must have grown up in money or whatever. Like it's just that that first reaction is you sort of think that they've had it easy, but you don't. You really don't know what they've gone through to get to where they are. Like I've had a lot of lessons of failure that have led me to where I am now. And I could have given up many, many, many times, especially with things that weren't working and not feeling good enough and not feeling like I deserve it. I could have just said, oh, I'll just go and work a normal job and make do and live week to week. But there was something inside me that just said, like, I want to break the cycle. I don't want to live the life that I grew up in. I'm just going to keep trying, keep throwing things out there and seeing if I can make something of it. I just knew that I would be able to make something. And I suppose growing up in the situation that I did, I've seen rock bottom and I know that I have it, like, and because I've come out of that, I know that there's always a way out. So I'm willing to risk everything to make something work. And if it fails, rather than just going into my shell and playing a victim about it, I'm always willing to go, okay, then what's next? Where's my next opportunity? And I think giving people the ability to see that in action is super powerful for those people too, because there's a lot of people that would think if they do something and it fails, that's the end of their world, like everything's done. And reality is that, life is short, but it's also long as well. So it's a journey.
That's great. That's you've really got that grit and determination. And you're right, a lot of people do give up very easily.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this when we caught up last time with the old imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And I think that can really set in, can't it, for people that have really battled with a lot of shame and a sense of, I actually, oh, do I deserve to be happy? Do I deserve, you know, a better life? And that fatalistic mentality that sets in when people have had a lot of trauma, when something starts to go right, there's this terrible fear that everything's just going to cave in again.
Yeah, for sure.
How'd you break through that? I mean, you've learnt resilience through your life with the shocking things that you've been through and the experiences that you've had to endure. But did you have in a vow that you kind of made when you were younger that you were going to break through this, or is it something that you really had to learn?
Yeah, I think subconsciously I knew that I wanted to break this, whether it was being a professional football player or doing some sort of business. From a young age, I was always trying to do something from a very young age. But I like to go back to your imposter syndrome comment there, I still struggle with that quite a bit. And I still struggle with self-sabotage. Like last month, we had an amazing month of sales, like the best month we've had in any business I've been a part of. This month's still really good, but it's not as good as last month. So I'm thinking, I'm not working hard enough. Like you're not good enough. Like, and I've got to pull myself back in and go, hey, hang on a minute. This is still a lot better than what you were doing historically, or what other people are even doing in the same situation. So yeah, that you've always got to, I suppose the way that I've been able to do it is not being like super narrow-minded in regards to like looking at it from a macro or micro perspective. It's like looking at it from the bigger perspective and going, okay, this is where we're at now, but this is like the journey that I've been on, and being able to attach myself to that. So yeah, from a young age, I knew that I needed to break that cycle. I was just going to keep trying things, trying new opportunities, and work out where I found my feet in the world. And yeah, it's taken 35 years for that to become a reality for sure.
Well, you've faced the worst fear in the face, haven't you? And if we can face the worst fear, then it's all up from there.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and I still struggle. Like, I still get anxiety and stuff like that. Like, I still struggle. I mentioned it to you the other week that I still struggle to go to sleep on a Thursday night. Like, and I haven't really been able to put my finger on what that was until recently. And I know that Thursday night was always a fearful night for me. And yeah, I've always struggled to sleep, but it's just about how we like bounce back from those thoughts. And you've got to go, okay, I know what I'm going through. Like, I know what these thoughts are. And yeah, you've just got to figure out how to best work through those thoughts. I think like you can't just ignore them. You've got to shine the light on them a bit and go, okay, well, why am I thinking like this, and what can I do to get myself out of this? Like, what makes me feel happy?
Yeah, it's really about learning the triggers.
Yeah.
Having worked as a counsellor for many, many years, a lot of people are not aware of their triggers, so they're caught really quickly every time. And the spiral back down to that dark place can happen so quickly. But yeah, by knowing our triggers, then we can have a plan in place right there and then when those, you know, those terrible feelings start to arise, to just cut it right there. You've started to become aware of those things and that you're able to manage your mind in those moments.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like I'm pretty stubborn as well. I think most people will say that, so I think that works in my advantage. But it's just, I think it comes back to like knowing what I want and knowing the true me. Like, it's taken a long time to learn the true AJ and what makes me happy, because I've always just done other things to make other people happy. Like, I was always like that pleaser that would just say yes, yes, yes to everything, and I would compromise my own internal well-being to make other people feel happy or whatever it might be. But now I'm at the stage where I'm like, okay, I need to be true to myself. And if it's going to upset my personal well-being and give me anxiety internally, I'll just put a stop to it quite quickly.
Yeah, that's awesome to be able to learn to do that. And I relate so much to a lot of what you're saying, having grown up with two alcoholic parents myself. And a lot of kids of alcoholics wear a veil of shame.
Yeah.
They also become pleasers in adult life because the role in the family is to keep the peace at any cost.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have violence in my home, but I had massive amounts of uncertainty, not knowing what was going to happen next and wondering, you know, is my mum going to be okay? And also something that I went through when I was nine, I had no safe haven anywhere at school or at home. And so what went on up here, I've got many triggers like you, but I've learnt how to manage those triggers today. And a head can be like a horror movie at times that just plays 24/7.
Yeah.
It's learning to switch off the madness, isn't it, in the head, the stinking thinking.
Yeah, definitely. I think uncertainty is a massive trigger for a lot of people as well. It's like you need to be able to attach yourself to something and know that everything's going to be okay. And I think where a lot of people find comfort is listening to other people's stories that have been through similar situations. And that gives them some sort of level of, okay, I can be a bit more certain that everything's going to be okay. Because, yeah, even for now, uncertainty, it plays havoc in my brain. I need to be like, okay, this is what it's going to look like, and I'm going to keep going until it looks like that. But then be also okay if things don't go towards that direction, but pivoting and creating a new some level of certainty, so a new goal or a new like shining star to look towards.
As you hear this story, what Kerry's discussing might be resonating strongly with you. Perhaps you've experienced something similar yourself and are looking for support. Kerry Atherton is an experienced counsellor and well-being coach and has private sessions available if you or someone you know needs some help. You don't have to deal with trauma, addiction, PTSD, and abuse alone. If you'd like to talk about today's episode or your own experiences, book a session with Kerry at empowerlifesolutions.com.au or check the link in the show notes and embrace a future filled with hope. Now back to the episode.
Hey, Jay, when you said that you came out and told the real story of AJ and where you grew up for the first time about 6 months ago, who was the first person you told?
My best friend. So he'd known a little bit about things, but yeah, it wasn't really, I don't know how the conversation started, but then I told him and then I told my wife as well, which she didn't even know. She'd always wondered why I'd never taken her to my parents' house or anything like that. Like, she's met my parents and stuff like that, but never once thought, oh, that I'd grown up in housing commission as well. And then I decided to post something on social media about it. Just one day I just went, you know what, I'm going to tell some people, like, I'm going to put it out there. And as soon as I did that, people were like, wow, your story is so powerful. Like, I had no idea. And then that got shared around a few times. And then the first real time that I've spoken deeply about it in public was on a podcast a few weeks, about a month ago, or a bit more, 6 weeks ago, I think. That opened up a lot of can of worms for myself mentally, just like laying it all out. But it also, at the time that I did it, was like, oh, I feel so good. Like, I feel really good. And that opened up a door into meeting the guys down at MOB, which is Men of Business on the Gold Coast, which have 220 young males that have been expelled or suspended from school or just can't cope with the normal schooling. And I went and checked them out on Monday and spoke to the founder and stuff like that and seeing what they were doing. And I was like, wow, I wish they had this when I was a kid, because they do like mindfulness and meditation. They have counselors there and they teach kids in a way that is individual so that kids can actually learn their normal schooling rather than going to school and just being told this is how you have to learn. And if you can't conform to this learning methodology, you're out. So yeah, it's a really cool opportunity for those kids. And that, yeah, that was a super emotional day for me because I was
would have been.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to going back down there and speaking in front of all of those kids and hopefully changing one of their lives or a couple of their lives, because that has that flow on effect that guy, I'll tell him the story, he'll attach to it, and then he'll tell his story, somebody will attach to it, and then just snowballs down the grapevine and hopefully changes somebody's life.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. I love that you're doing that. And I actually worked in schools here on the Sunshine Coast for about 14 years with troubled kids, because I wanted to help prevent other kids from having to go through what I went through. And I wanted to be able to be an example of hope to them.
Yeah.
That you can come out of sexual abuse, you can come out of family with alcoholism, you can come out of bullying, you can come out of domestic violence, and you can live a good life. You can come out of addictions, because I've been sober for over 40 years now. You can come out of all that, and there is a great life ahead.
Hmm.
I think people need to hear stories of hope, because it's going to let them know that they're going to make it as well. And that was what I desperately searched for, somebody that could tell me, you're going to get through this hard time and you're going to make it.
Yeah.
I want to be that person for everyone else now.
Yeah, you're doing an amazing job. And it's really crazy to think that, like, I was one day that 14-year-old kid that I seen at that school, and you think, geez, I had like so much baggage I was carrying back then. Like, how did I even show up to school? Like, how did I hide this from everyone else? Knowing that, it's like, yeah, that's pretty, it's scary in a way. So having the ability to help a kid in that situation that could look to drugs, alcohol, or even suicide, because they don't feel like there's a way out, or there's an opportunity, or they're never going to get an opportunity, because this is all they know. Like, they only see that same cycle. Their mums, their dads, their aunties, uncles, they're all in that same sort of living experience. There's no way out. And, like, yeah, knowing that these kids are carrying so much baggage and so much fear and anxiety and uncertainty and not even getting fed properly. Like, the good thing about that school is they feed them their lunch, breakfast, afternoon, dinner, and send home meals so that they're actually fed and have nutrition. Yeah, it's just crazy that, like, to think, wow, that's what I went through and this is where I am now. And if I don't go, I'm going to help people, then I'm not living the true AJ, because, yeah, I don't like seeing people go through what I went through.
You're going to be such an amazing, well, you are now, but you're going to be such an amazing role model.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And it's a new chapter, isn't it? When you open up and really share the real truth for the first time, like you said before, it's a very exposing feeling, isn't it? Yeah. But you feel free. Like, it's like, now I don't actually care what my family and friends think about me, but I don't actually care about anyone's judgment.
And that's the biggest thing too, is fear of judgment, because you've been hiding something for so long. Like, I always had this massive fear of, like, what do people see? Like, I make sure that, like, the perception of me was, it wasn't reality, really. Like, I didn't want people to judge me, but now I'm like, oh, well, like, if you judge me, judge me. Like, there's still people in my family that won't accept the reality of what we've gone through. They're not willing. They're still attached to the fact that, like, yeah, they're just not willing to let go that was our reality, and they still hide it, and because it casts a shadow on what they've been hiding, right? To their people, to their tribe, and all of that. But so that's something that upsets me. But also, if I don't tell the true story myself and what I've been through, then I am doing no justice to myself, and I'm also doing no justice to the people out there that need to hear this story. And that can relate to it.
Yeah, because whatever's kept in the dark can never be dealt with. It's only when we bring it out into the light and the truth's brought out that healing can begin.
Yeah, exactly right. You can't heal if you're in denial.
No, that's it. Sure. Hey, Jay, I just want to touch on a topic that is getting a lot of media attention at the moment. And we've touched on it already, but it's domestic violence.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of guys that I'm working with, and I'm hearing it all the time, that because of the constant barrage by the media about the bad men out there in domestic violence, that a lot of men are just feeling really marginalized and boxed in. And after I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago, it really hit me that so many men have been victims of domestic violence. And I thought, what a massive trigger it must be for you and other guys that have been the victims of domestic violence to hear this all the time. I know you've really broken the mold. You've changed things for your own family. But more often than not, and I'm not making a blanket statement here, but often people will go on to do repeat behavior because it's the learned behavior that's normal. And so obviously we need good guys and strong guys that are willing to, you know, support other guys to give them a hand up to show them that there's a different way out of that life and that they don't have to respond like that. But what about all the guys who have been victims of domestic violence? Like, we never hear any support for them.
Yeah, you're spot on. Like, it does cast a big light on the trauma and stuff that you've been through and bring up certain memories. Like, the more I talk about what I went through, the more memories start to appear, yeah. Which is crazy. And there's some things where I'm like, holy, how did I even forget this? Yeah. Like, even happened. But I think it needs to be spoken about, like domestic violence on a whole thing. It's not like just male domestic violence. It's also my stepmother was very controlling. And while back then it would have been classed as domestic violence, now you look back at it and it's domestic violence. It's emotional abuse. And that was that's something I've never even spoken about until you just raised it then, that I remember, like, she was very emotionally manipulative. And so was my mum in a way, back towards the whole situation. But yeah, I think there needs to be a massive light shone on domestic violence, but it needs to be coming from an angle that it's not just men. Like, yeah, men seem to be a lot more violent, but there's a lot of men that have struggled with domestic violence from parents and then also partners and emotional abuse and stuff like that. But yeah, there's no way, like, it's crazy to think. I just don't know how people have the response to act on something like that. It's so easy to walk away from a situation rather than use violence or control or coercive control or manipulation or financial abuse to keep someone around. Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Well, I mean, bullies have been bullied themselves, haven't they? I guess, you know, in those situations. And I mean, I've counseled guys and women who have been abusers. Nobody's ever shown them a different way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to, you know, put more focus and attention on, is how can we support people early on in the journey to help them know a different way to react.
Yeah, I think that's where it starts. It's
men and women, not just targeting men. All men should not be targeted or marginalized for the actions of a few.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. So you need to look at it from a top-down approach in regards to, like, what these people have been through. Like, there's no room for any domestic violence, but also there needs to be something done about helping facilitate people's trauma. And I don't think, like, medication or anything like that is the way to go about it. I think there needs to be an approach from a wellness perspective, like breath work, meditation, mindfulness, retreats and stuff like that, not just saying you're a bad guy, like, to people that have been abused and potentially starting to show the signs that they're falling into that cycle, and just giving them a platform to deal with their trauma so that they can move forward and not carry on that trauma through their generations. Because yeah, they start doing it to their kids or partners, and then that person does it to, it's just that cycle that needs to be broken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the way that people help that is by speaking out about it, saying that they were able to break the cycle and this is how I done it. While I might not be perfect, I think even just doing it is a massive thing.
I've just joined the board for Mentoring Men Australia. I think there's a massive impact that mentoring can have on guys, because so many of them don't feel they could open up, like, to a therapist, but maybe to another guy that could mentor them, that's not such a, you know, daunting concept. Mentoring's got a really large place in Australia. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It's really hard to open up. Like, I've been in the situation, so I've been to a numerous amount of psychologists and I've never connected with anyone really. And I haven't been for years on end. I've been able to deal with it myself now by doing mindfulness and meditation and stuff like that, connecting with the right people. But I think it's really, really hard when you go into a psychologist and they're somebody that's been through uni, that's lived a great life, that has no lived experience that they can relate to or connect with.
That's right. There's great psychologists out there and there's great counsellors out there, but I always say to anybody, get the right support for you and preferably somebody that has an understanding or has been through what you've been through.
Because they listen better. And when you know somebody's been through that, it's so easy to open up and tell you truth, because you still hold back. Like in psychologists and that, you hold back because you don't want to be judged. You're fearful of being judged. But with somebody that's lived the experience and being like, mate, I feel you, this is what's happened to me. You're like, okay, then this is what's happened to me. And it's just like you can peel the layer of the onion back so fast when you have that connection.
That's it. Just got a few questions now. What's been your hardest day?
Hardest day? Recently when I was involved in another business, I chose to exit that business. I was feeling like maybe it's a lot of self-doubt. I think like I was just so anxious about like being judged and stuff like that for being a cop-out and for wanting to leave the business and just not having like the strength or feeling like I had the strength to speak up. So I just chose to left, and that was really hard. Like that knocked me around a fair bit. I got pretty sick from it, from the stress of it actually. Like it broke me down and I thought there was no way out. And it did take me a long time to bounce back from that. But the way that I broke out of that was from like communicating with my best friend was one of my business partners in that business.
That would have been hard.
It was very hard. Yeah. And it was at the same time I was getting married to my new wife. And so he was like my best man. And I was starting to think, geez, this is not going to work out. Like this is just going to end up bad. But we communicated and worked out what the core root of the root issue was of that, and it wasn't me when I thought it was externally. We were able to work through that, and it just came down to being open and transparent. And I just didn't feel like I had the ability to be open and transparent. I suppose that's probably what started this journey of being more open and transparent about like my truth, because there was like a lot of self-doubt and there was a lot of self-sabotage and stuff in that, and being aware of that, it was massive.
Thanks for sharing that. When we keep that stuff in our head, what we're left with is the lies, and we don't have any other perspective or any other truth. Mm. That's why I encourage people so much, to speak out, to find someone that you can talk to, because then you can get another perspective, and often that's going to be a much truer one than all those, self-defeating core beliefs that keep going round and round. AJ, what's been your happiest moment?
Oh, God. I'd say the birth of my three daughters. That's been pretty cool. That's really softened me a lot. Yeah, I have three daughters, 9, 7, and 7 months old. And just, watching them grow up and grow up in an environment where they feel comfortable and confident and stuff like that. I'm still learning to be like a really good dad. I know I'm a lot better than what my parents were, but there's still times when I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have got frustrated about that, or like I feel a lot of like, oh, am I good enough with my daughters as well? But yeah, they definitely, just watching like them develop as humans and get confidence and feel happy and enjoy their life is probably
and feel safe.
Yeah, they feel super safe, like, yeah, which is cool.
AJ, what's been your greatest light bulb moment?
That's a good one.
Sorry to throw that, and they're like, wow, gosh, I wish I had some time to prepare for that.
Yeah, greatest light bulb moment is probably just knowing that, like, that I am good enough, I think. Like, there's always been that self-doubt and self-hate and self-sabotage, but the biggest light bulb moment was just, working out that I'm good enough and that I do deserve the things that I'm building. And probably the other biggest light bulb moment was just like how much I need to prioritize myself and not drinking or not using that as an outlet to mask all my fears and emotions and stuff. Like, I've never been a massive drinker, but what I would do is I'd go out and go on like a day or two bender, and on a weekend, like once every couple of months, and just release all my traumas from drinking, having fun. But it's just a real toxic cycle. And since I've stopped that, it's been like a massive game changer in regards to the way that I approach life and resilience and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. So last question. At last night's event, I had two people that have been through shocking trauma, done things that they really, really regretted. And I think the greatest message last night for everyone was that we might have a past, but we are not our past.
Yeah.
And when we can be open, that's the beginning too of shedding shame, when we can forgive ourselves for, different things and forgive others as well. But I just want to know, as we close now, what's your greatest message for out there for anybody who is feeling ashamed of their past, whether it's something that's happened to them, something they've been through, or something that they've done?
Yeah, I suppose the biggest thing is make yourself aware of that, and then you've got to go, okay, I'm going to move forward from that, and I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that I'm putting myself in the right environments to make sure that, like, that's never going to be a part of me again. I'm aware of that's what I've been through. Like, I'm aware of my journey, but I'm also going to do everything in my power to make sure that I'm not put back in that environment. And so that just comes down to simple as, like, if I'm feeling uncomfortable in a situation, I'm just going to walk away from that situation. I'm not going to let anybody influence me or manipulate me to thinking that I should be put into a situation I don't want to be. I think, it's just highlighting the fact that's what we've lived, but that's not me now. I'm moving forward. I'm moving on with my life, and I'm here to make a change and a difference for myself, which is also going to impact other people. And I think there's a lot of power behind that.
Well, thanks, AJ, for sharing today, and you are a true inspiration.
I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the time, and hopefully there's somebody out there listening to this that really takes a few things from it and can really make positive change in their own lives, and then hopefully help other people and impact other people's lives.
You're a real life story of hope.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stories of Hope with Kerry Atherton. If this conversation helped you, please consider sharing the podcast with a friend or leaving a rating and review on your podcast player. If you'd like to find out more about Kerry Atherton, head to storiesofhope.com.au, where you can purchase her books or find her next event. Check the show notes for links and information about our guest in this episode. And remember, you don't have to walk your path alone.